Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Empty Set Entertainment presents Slay, created by Scott Sigler and Rob Otto, performed by Scott Sigler. This story is intended for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, Junkie. It is almost Slay Day. May 1st is the day Slay Book 1 is out in ebook. Click that Kindle link over at scottsigler.com/slay and pre-order now. And if it's after May 1st, get your ass over there and order it and enjoy it. The Audible version will be out in mid-May of 2024. We re-recorded the entirety of Book 1, so if you listen to the podcast of Slay Season 1, you are in for a treat. The audio quality is much higher. Of course, I narrate. So if you've been waiting for a new FDO-narrated, full-length, unabridged, commercial-free audiobook, you will want this. 17 unique character voices, all done by me. It's probably even more than that. But hey, I am so slammed with Warpath, The Crypt Book 2, and soon GFL 7's final draft. My noggin is fried, kids. It's fried. Do you want to know when a Sigler book drops? Well, we have two great ways. Text SIGTEXT, one word, to 855-955-5095. That's SIGTXT, one word, to 855-955-5095. We send text to your fancy phone letting you know about live streams, big news, and when books drop, like Slay Day! The other great way to know is to sign up for my newsletter. Go to scottsigler.com/newsletter, toss in your info, and that's all there is to it. Okay, time to get back into Slay Season 2. This is a rough episode, folks. Bad things happen to good people. I hope you can handle the dream gaunts. Let me get you caught up on the story so far, and then we're all going to go buy us a really nice wicker basket. Kelly Stroman and Morgan Stone set off to deal with Teddy Two Fingers at an undisclosed location. But Teddy, Haimana, and Agnetha attack Droman's Barren Heights mansion with magic and with flame-throwing aerial drones that set Droman's living guardian trees and much of the mansion ablaze. Lincoln and Billy, who were guarding Delilah Droman, fought against Agnetha and Haimana's murderous giant flying centipedes. Lincoln had downed a bottle of whiskey, which slowed his reaction time and let a drone get the drop on him. The drone fired a jet of flame that should have set Lincoln ablaze, but Billy somehow bent the flame toward himself and absorbed it, bringing it into his own body and making him so hot his clothes burned away. Billy was about to use this new power against Agnetha when a shot rang out. A bullet hit his shoulder, dropping him. Keg-sized killer beetles ripped the floor out from under Delilah. Lincoln dove after her, but lost her in the smoke. She was taken by Agnetha, Teddy, and Haimana, who shot across Barren Heights and vanished into the night. Lincoln, unable to chase them, rushed to help Billy. And now, episode 57 of Slay. Lincoln sprang up through the hole. He landed next to Billy, who lay naked on the scorched and melted carpet, a cloud of orange aura rising up from the bullet wound in his shoulder, red blood trickling down from it. Both things were very bad. Billy could die from blood loss, shock from his innate filaments boiling away, or both. He moved slightly, his eyes open and his pupils wide. "I'm here, kid," Lincoln said. "I got you." Lincoln bunched up his leather cloak, his motion slow and awkward. He was still feeling the effects of the booze. He pressed the cloak hard against the bullet wound. Billy grunted in pain, but didn't resist. The room stank of gasoline, burning hair from the wool carpet, probably, and still smoldering centipede meat. Smoke hung in the air, oozed out the hole where the window had been. Outside, arborvitae and other trees continued to burn. Lincoln heard flames crackling on the roof as well.
"I think I got shot," Billy said. "Did someone shoot me?"
"Afraid so. Let me work on it. It's not that bad."
That was a lie. The wound was bad. The filaments that made up the orange aura should have been wiggling around inside the wound, working to knit damaged flesh together. That they just spilled out into the air told Lincoln that Teddy had used no-heal coating on his bullets. With his free hand, Lincoln reached into the folds of his cloak and found his first aid kit. He had to stop the bleeding and the boiling. How could Billy have so much aura in him? He'd barely even begun training. A gust of wind whipped through the hole in the wall, driving the curtains inward like flags in a storm. The wind whipped up ash and burned clothes, but was gone almost as soon as it had begun. The curtains dropped down again. Lincoln glanced out the hole. All the tree fires were out.
"Delilah!"
Droman, outside, bellowing with fury and anguish. A thick strand of tightly packed vines came through the hole like the tendril of a great green kraken. Droman slid along that vine and into the room. He hopped off just as another mini-hurricane wind blast roared, this time snapping the curtains outward. Droman looked at Lincoln and Billy, then around the scorched, smoldering room, at the dead giant centipedes.
"Delilah!" he yelled. "Delilah, where are you?"
Lincoln braced for impact.
"She's gone. Teddy took her."
Green fire flared from eyes narrowed to hateful slits. Droman's fist-sized emerald necklace pulsed like green lightning trapped in clear ice.
"You're lying," he said. "Where is my daughter?"
The ivy crown ringing Droman's head wriggled and flowed and weaved. His forest green robes rippled from some internal storm of energy, stored up and ready to burst outward like an exploding nuke. Lincoln needed to stand up, to prepare to fight for his life, for Billy's life, but he had to see to his friend's wound.
"Teddy took her," Billy said, pain warbling his words.
We tried to stop him, Mr. Droman. We gotta find her."
Droman's green fire winked out, revealing eyes brimming with shock and disbelief. The dagger of guilt drove deeper into Lincoln's soul.
"You let him take her," Droman said in a haunting whisper. "You let Teddy take my daughter."
Another gust of wind. Morgan Stone floated through the hole, long-bladed Naginta on one hand. She landed light as a feather. Was she a wind wizard? At a glance, Morgan took in the centipedes, Lincoln and Billy, then looked to Droman.
"Delilah's gone," he said.
Morgan's eyes widened, her shoulders sagged, but only for a moment.
"The fires are extinguished."
Morgan knelt next to Billy.
"I've got him, Franks. Give me room to work."
Lincoln remembered Stone working on Delilah's arm, an arm that Lincoln had accidentally broken. The girl had been good as new in minutes. He stood and he stepped aside. Droman sagged, stumbled a half step, put a hand against the wall. His shimmer of power flickered, faded, and went out. Lincoln knew how the man felt. He knew it all too well. Droman despaired because Lincoln had failed. Delilah was gone because Lincoln had failed.
"You were going after Teddy," Lincoln said. "What happened?"
Billy hissed in pain.
"Be still, William," Morgan said. "This will only take a moment."
Droman turned,
put his back against the wall, slid down it, and sat on the pink carpet. It was a ruse. He sounded like a man who had just had his soul ripped from his body. In the patchwork, a small castle in Hades, Hymana, she crafted a glamour, let me discover it, made me think I had tracked them down at long last. The best glamour I've ever seen. Felt so real. When we went in and saw what it was, I knew we'd taken the bait. We rushed back. Billy hissed again, but not as bad as the first time. Dull pain flared in Lincoln's right thigh, pain that had been there all along, but he had blocked it out. The huge beetle had pincered his armor hard enough to bend meshwork steel. Lincoln quickly pulled off his gauntlets, found the hidden catches on his thigh armor, and released them. He tossed the dented steel onto the burned carpet. With haunted eyes, Droman looked at Lincoln. "I hired you to protect my daughter," he said. "To protect her." The hopelessness in the mage's voice made Lincoln wish for Droman's fury to return. Anger could be fought with anger, and for Lincoln, anger came easy. But this, Droman deflated, destroyed, it was all Lincoln could do to remain standing, to not drop to the floor himself. "Hymana's better than I knew," Droman said. "She destroyed my vine golems. They are downstairs, eaten by locusts. I don't know how she got them in. They used machines to burn my trees. They played me like a fiddle." He again looked at Lincoln. "You told me to stay home and protect Delilah myself. You told me. I didn't listen." Droman's head drooped. "You will be fine, William," Morgan said. "You need to rest and heal. Let me help you up." Morgan gripped Billy's non-injured arm, pulled him to his feet. Some kind of seaweed or other plant was wrapped around his shoulder wound. He looked like he could barely stand on his own. "Thank you," Billy said. "Could I get something to wear?" Billy was naked, the hand of his good arm covering his crotch. Lincoln willed his cloak to unfasten. He removed it, draped it around Billy's shoulders. "I'll find you some clothes," Morgan said, and hurried out of the room. The cloak fit Billy well. "You saved my life," Lincoln said. "You absorbed that fire. It would have lit me up. How did you do that?" The drone's fire jet would have set Lincoln ablaze because Lincoln's reaction time hadn't been what it should have been. "I got no idea," Billy said. I can barely remember what happened. I just did it. Link, we gotta find Delilah. Teddy's a kidnapper, right? He'll ask for a ransom. Mr. Droman can pay it. He's rich. Right, Mr. Droman?" Droman said nothing. Lincoln knew why. "Teddy doesn't always ask for a ransom," Lincoln said. "It's actually pretty rare that he does." Billy's face wrinkled. "He doesn't ask for money?" Realization hit him. "Oh, yeah. The Nightmare Factory thing. We gotta go get her, Link. We gotta." Those words were a deep cut. One among thousands. "We will, kid," Lincoln said. Another lie. He'd never been able to find Teddy's sweatshop. No one had. Not even the mighty Kellius Droman. Link squatted down on his heels in front of the defeated mage.
"I'd say something to try and comfort you, Droman, but you'd see right through that shit," Lincoln said. "Trust me when I say I have more experience than you do at feeling the way you feel right now. I don't care that I couldn't find Teddy before, and I don't care if you think Teddy can't be found. I'm gonna find him. When you're done with your pity party, let me know, because I need all the help I can get. We're gonna find the motherfucker who hurt our children."
Droman lifted his head just enough to look up from under his brows.
You've faced him twice since we met, he said. You lost both times. You failed your child, Franks, and you failed mine. Get out of my sight.
His head drooped again. Morgan returned with a rich, green, terry cloth robe. Lincoln held the cloak wide so Billy had a shred of privacy to put the robe on.
Thanks, said Billy, tugging the belt tight.
Lincoln again donned his cloak, willed it to fasten around his neck. He wore the armor and cloak of a Rixitor, someone dedicated to protecting the innocent. In all his life, he had never felt like such a fraud.
I put out the fires, Morgan said. I will begin the repairs to the wards and protections and improve them in case Hymana strikes again.
Lincoln nodded, but he knew Hymana would not return. That wasn't how Teddy worked. Teddy had gotten what he wanted and would not put himself at risk of Droman's wrath again, just as he had never put himself at risk of Lincoln's wrath. Teddy would hide away until the next time he needed fresh meat for a sweatshop. Morgan quietly picked up Lincoln's thigh armor, handed it to him, then gestured to the door.
Lincoln, William, I will see you to the transit node and send you home.
I'm real sorry, Mr. Droman, Billy said. Mr. Droman, we tried. We'll get Delilah back. You'll see.
Droman did not look up. He was a broken man, just like Lincoln was. Lincoln and Billy followed Morgan out of Delilah's room.
In the climate-ravaged world of 2072, the city of Pura stands as a miraculous green haven. Pura is a geoengineered paradise that protects its fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. In a time when the world outside is unsafe, it's vital for Pura's existence that people rally behind the purpose of the city, and Demetria Lopez, head of the city's public relations, tirelessly promotes its idyllic image. But when she stumbles on a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Pura's existence, she must decide who and what she's willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Ray Seahorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
She was in Cordis. Where in Cordis? She didn't know. All she knew for sure was that they had transited her and that she was scared. So scared.
"You're being quiet," Haimana said. "That's a good girl. You always were a good girl."
The thin hood over Delilah's head blocked any sight, but it didn't obstruct her hearing, especially when Haimana leaned in so close, Delilah could feel the woman's breath through the hood's thin fabric.
"Daddy's going to kill you," Delilah said. "He won't let you go this time."
Delilah felt a strong hand on the back of her neck, felt the sharp points of coffin nails. She remembered when Haimana had been her father's student, remembered how pretty Haimana's nails always were. Back then, at 7 years old, Delilah had wanted to look like Haimana. Delilah had wanted to be Haimana.
"He didn't let me go, little one," Haimana said. "I left. You were too young to remember."
But that wasn't true. Delilah had been young, yes, but she remembered all of it. Her ability to remember things, even things from an early age, often freaked her dad out. Would Daddy rescue her? Delilah didn't know. He was always busy doing something else, always off somewhere else, leaving her at home. Maybe he would be too busy to come for her. Daddy wasn't like Lincoln. Lincoln would come for her. Delilah didn't know how she knew that. She just did. Lincoln would come, and he would kill them all. The hood didn't block her sense of smell, either. Daddy had sent her to enough equestrian lessons that she knew a horse when she smelled one. She was in a horse-drawn carriage, or something along those lines, bumping over cobblestone streets. Her, Teddy Two Fingers, Haimana, and that awful woman with a centipede for an arm.
"Delilah," Haimana said, "I'm going to give you some advice, for old time's sake. What Teddy tells you to do, you do. It will go better for you that way."
"Things will go better when Daddy crucifies you on a mulberry bush," Delilah said.
The words were out of her mouth before she knew it. The hand gripping the back of her neck squeezed harder, and this time, the coffin nail points dug in.
"Don't damage her," Teddy said. "I might still ransom her."
Haimana laughed derisively, but her hand relaxed.
"You won't ransom her," she said. "As I told you, this girl is worth more than all the others combined."
The carriage stopped.
"That remains to be seen," Teddy said. "Agnetha, bring her."
Now Delilah felt breath on her other ear, heard the crinkle clatter of many thin legs scraping against metal.
"You can walk and not give me any problems, or I can carry you," Agnetha said. "Which would you prefer?"
The crinkle clatter sound increased. Delilah knew what it was. Agnetha liked to put her grotesque centipede arm against her breastplate, so dozens of thin legs drummed against the steel the way someone might drum their fingers on a desktop. The woman did that to intimidate. And it worked.
"I'll walk," Delilah said. "I won't give you any trouble. I promise."
A door opened. Delilah sensed a change in the light. It was nighttime in Cordis. Was the light from a street lamp?
Solid choice, Agnetha said. And don't bother screaming. It's after hours. By the time anyone comes, your guts will be cooling on the cobblestones. Got it?
Delilah nodded. Agnetha gripped Delilah's shoulder, guided her path. The footing changed from cobblestone to tile. They were inside a building. It was cold. Delilah's sweatshirt had burned when Billy caught fire. Was Billy okay? Was Lincoln okay? The footing changed from tile to wood, slightly shaky, as if the floor beneath her moved when someone took a step. Delilah sensed the room was small. Teddy, tight to one side, Agnetha, on the other, and Haimana, close as well.
Down, Teddy said.
Delilah jerked as the floor seemed to drop beneath her. She was in an elevator. She heard pulleys rolling.
I'm going to put you right to work, Teddy said. We will see if Haimana is correct about you.
Delilah realized, suddenly, she was descending to Teddy Two Fingers' sweatshop, the factory that harvested filaments from children's nightmares. Lincoln had told her about it. Sam had been here.
I won't work for you, Delilah said. I don't know what you want me to do, but I won't do it.
She wished she could see. The bag over her head smelled.
I'll wager you'll change your mind, Teddy said. You will be my foreman and manage the output. My current foreman can't handle the gig, so I'm demoting her down to the line. I want you to see what that means.
The elevator kept going down, and down, and down.
I'm in the mood for pizza, Teddy said. Hi, Mana, you up for a pie?
And down.
You know I am lactose intolerant, Haimana said. Why must you get pizza?
And down.
Your imaginary condition doesn't dictate the menu, Teddy said. Agnetha, pizza?
And down.
I could eat, Agnetha said. You don't want burgers?
And down. Teddy huffed.
Oh, I'm sick of burgers.
And down, and down, and down. Delilah heard a new sound, a muffled sound. She couldn't place it, but it disturbed her. The elevator stopped. She heard one of those old accordion gates slide open. Agnetha grabbed her arm, pushed her forward. The footing changed from wood to stone. Delilah walked. As she did, she finally placed the disturbing noise. It was muffled and tinny, but there was so much of it coming from both sides. Children, shrieking in terror. The tinniness. The children were behind closed doors, metal doors. And another noise, too, also tinny, also obstructed. It sounded like owls?
Here we are, Teddy said.
Delilah heard the jangle of metal keys, then one sliding into a lock, then the metal screech of old hinges. Agnetha turned her 90 degrees, gently but firmly pushed her forward, stopped her after only a few steps. The hinges screeched again. Delilah heard the gong of a metal door closing.
This is your predecessor, Teddy said.
The hood was yanked from Delilah's head. In front of her, a little black-haired girl lay on a table. Not a rectangular table, but more like a flat cutout in the shape of a person with arms, legs, and a spot for the head. The shape was child-sized. Thick, 2-foot-long stick bugs were upside down under the cutout, their spindly legs reaching up and over, locking down on the little girl's limbs, holding her fast. The stick bugs were motionless, save for their antennae, which moves slowly, angling this way and that. Delilah couldn't breathe. Was she already in a nightmare? The girl's head turned. Snot coated her lip, hung from her nose. Tears glazed the red skin of her eyes. She squinted. Delilah? Delilah's stomach did flip-flops. Her heart pinched. She recognized the girl. Gabriella Radu. They had been at summer camp together, in the south of France. Delilah had been a counselor in training. Gabriella had been one of the younger girls in her cabin. The girl started crying again, but also smiling, also laughing.
You're here to save me, she said. Have you come to save me? Get my dad, Delilah. Get my dad.
This wasn't happening. This wasn't happening.
As you can see, she's not the sharpest knife in the drawer. I should have known adult couldn't manage my production line.
A hoot. Like an owl, but not. More of a hoot gurgle. A hungry sound. Another hoot, more urgent than the first. At the base of the table, down on the stone floor, lay a wicker basket. Wicker lid closed. That's where the hoot had come from.
Delilah, Gabriella said through choked sobs. Get my parents, please. Get my mom. Don't let him do this to me. Don't let him do this to me.
Delilah felt numb inside, as cold as a rock on the shore of a frozen river.
Time is money, Teddy said. Let's get started. Watch and learn, little Droman. Someday soon, you will be called upon to perform this rite.
He sat on the floor in front of the wicker basket, his leather pants creaking as he tucked his cowboy-booted feet into the lotus position.
I hate this, Imana said. I will wait outside.
Was that disgust Delilah heard in the bug witch's voice? Fear? Both? Teddy waved a hand dismissively.
Go get yourself some fake cheese.
Agnetha held the door open. Imana walked out, her red kimono flowing. Agnetha shut the door behind her. Teddy spread his arms. He dipped his head, flipped it up fast, flinging his long silver hair behind him.
Bujanyasa, sumuya,
he said. The wicker basket's lid shot upward so hard it bounced off the ceiling. It fell, hit the stone floor, and bounced away. Something inside the basket. Something made of dry, flaky flesh, colored a sickly gray. Whatever it was, it made Delilah want to turn and run. Teddy began to moan, to sway slightly from side to side. From the basket, a finger? Elephant gray, cracked skin. A finger with too many knuckles. Fingernail black and chipped, spotted with ochre mold. It was no insect, nothing of Haimana's doing. This was older, far older. Delilah's body decided for her, made her turn and run, but she'd barely moved before a thick centipede arm coiled around her, body squeezing and legs wiggling, holding her tight. The centipede's nauseating, eyeless head swung in front of her face, its fat, black, pointed pincers spread wide, ready to snap.
Watch, girl, Agnetha said. You will watch.
The centipede arm turned Delilah roughly, made her face toward Teddy and the basket before him.
Bayi, agutuyatut, Teddy said. Yajnum svivkurut.
The finger extended from the basket. Too many knuckles, too many knuckles. Stretched toward Gabriella's feet, almost as if it was sniffing her. Delilah's heart filled with revulsion, with a desperate need to not see what was about to happen.
Let me go, she shut her eyes tight. Let me go! Let me go! Let me go! Let me go!
She felt a shifting of the centipede arm that held her motionless, felt the long body slide around her. And then something sharp and pointy touched her eyelids.
Oh, no, 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 no.
The pointy somethings pulled her eyes open, stayed open, held that way by the centipede's hooked pincers. More legs, thin and cold, wrapped around her forehead and cheeks, held her head iron still. She stared straight ahead, unable to do anything else. Teddy kept swaying, kept moaning. More fingers extended from the wicker basket, six in total, moving like jointed tentacles, clustered close together and pointing forward like the tentacles of a squid. They grabbed Gabriella's feet and pulled. The thing hauled itself out of the basket, the six gray fingers and a reddish body the size of a fist, and a tail, soft and vile, dotted with yellow mold and oozing open sores. A dream gaunt. The beast pulled itself up onto Gabriella's shins. Gabriella looked down her body, saw the six fingers pulling the flesh fist over her knees, up her thighs. The little girl screamed. She screamed so loud Delilah heard vocal cords snap and fray. The dream gaunt's diseased fingers pulled its body up Gabriella's thighs, to her stomach, to her chest. She thrashed, tried to break free. The stick bugs tightened their hold, locking her arms and legs down even stronger. The dream gaunt reached Gabriella's chest. Probing fingers felt at her mouth, at her nose. She thrashed her head side to side, screamed, cried. Gabriella begged, calling to her father who could not help her. The dream gaunt pulled itself up until its fist-sized body rested on her throat. Four of the two long fingers gripped her face, held her head perfectly still. The remaining two fingers rose up like multi-jointed snakes, then plunged straight into her eyes. Gabriella screamed louder, maybe, but Delilah wasn't sure because her own screams drowned out all else. Two fingers angled toward Gabriella's ears, then drove in to the base knuckle. The last two fingers slid deep into her nostrils. Gabriella shrieked in terror and unimaginable agony and kept shrieking until the long tail with its oozing open sores drove into her screaming mouth and down her throat. Gabriella fell still. Only her chest moved, slowly rising and falling. Teddy stood. He brushed his hands together, then brushed off the seat of his leather pants.
"The dream gaunt will make her worst fears a constant reality," he said. "She will produce filament for us at a high rate. You, little Droman, will oversee that production and make sure we hit the quotas I set for you. I will teach you how to do it. If you don't meet the quota..." He gestured to the dream gaunt with its horrid fingers deep in Gabriella's eyes, ears, and mouth. "Then you will be put on the line. Do you understand?"
The centipede released Delilah's head. She nodded. She nodded as hard as she could.
"I understand. I understand. I understand," she said. "I'll do it. Just please don't put that thing on me, please."
Teddy Two Fingers smiled wide.
"Fantastic," he said. "Your training begins immediately. Soon we'll have this factory humming right along. Agnetha, order that pizza. Double cheese, pepperoni, and mushrooms. Activating a gaunt makes me famished."
You have been listening to Slay, created by Scott Sigler and Rob Otto. Performed by Scott Sigler. Copyright 2024, Empty Set Entertainment. For more info on Scott Sigler, his novels, short stories, and podcasts, visit scottsigler.com. SlayMusic.com. Theme music is the song They're Watching Me by the band Super Weapon.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.